We present John le Carré's A Perfect Spy, adapted for radio in 8 parts by René Basilico. Starring James Fox as Magnus Pym, with James Grout as Jack Brotherhood, and Brenda Bruce as Miss Dubber. A Perfect Spy, Part 7.
Give me those names again. Carver, Wexler, Lederer, is that? L-E-D? Got it. Yes, if you wouldn't mind. The small conference room. Hello, Jack.
I heard. The Yanks are coming.
Wexler's flown in specially from the States.
Oh, sounds ominous.
Who's Lederer?
Analyst, Vienna Station, family friend of the Pims.
Oh.
Who are we putting in?
Beau, Nigel, and you.
That all?
Nobody added, nobody left out.
All right, if I go in.
They're waiting for you.
Thanks, Kate.
Good luck.
Ah, Jack, do come in.
They've arrived. 3 of them.
I wonder what's so important that they have to fly in Wexler overnight.
God knows.
We must stick together, Jack. No rocking the boat, and positively no hint of our concern over Pym.
Bear thinks it might prove a storm in a teacup.
That's Whitehall's view, that it'll be a rerun of the Washington affair, not a new situation at all.
Well, let's go and find out, shall we?
Yes, mustn't keep them waiting. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Harry, how very nice to see you again.
You too, Beau. Nice to be back in London.
Good flight?
The usual red eye. You know everybody on our side.
Yes, I think so, don't we?
Hello, Jack. Nigel.
Do please sit down, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Coffee will be here shortly.
Fine.
Well, now, Harry, the ball's at your feet, I think, so I suppose you'd better kick off.
Okay, Beau, I'm going to start by asking Carver here to set out our, agency position overall on this thing at this moment in time. Mike?
Thank you, Harry.
This is vis-a-vis Pym, I take it.
As you say, Beau, vis-a-vis Pym. Mm.
The logistics involved here require us to go back over the course some little distance so that we can slot in the new data where we can all take a good look at it in the light of what has gone on before.
You want to do a different bow? Just say so, and we'll see if we can accommodate you.
My dear chap, you're bowling. You must set your field as you think best.
Pardon me?
Do please go on, Mike.
Well, let's see now. March 81, defectors report. May 81, Stiggins analysis. March 82, report from an agent in place. And a whole stack of reports to the same effect. Namely, that the entire Balkan effort of one of the Western intelligence services is being orchestrated by Czech intelligence in Prague.
All rather old hat, isn't it?
Thus far, Beau. Thus far.
And you want to take it from here, Grant?
Right. Grant is currently our chief intelligence analyst on the Vienna station. And, of course, he worked on this case in Washington.
Did he, by God?
Gentlemen, these are photographs of a Czech intelligence officer, variously known to us as Petz, or Hempel, or Zaworski.
Known to us, Nigel?
I'll run a check. Do you have anything else on him? Height? Weight?
5 feet 10, 160 pounds.
Thank you.
And he walks with a pronounced limp.
Which leg?
Left. Walks with a stick.
Of course, he may have lost the moustache by now.
Go on, Grant.
Hans Ulbricht Petz came to our attention about 6 months ago, posing as a journalist at an East-West conference in Salzburg. A new face to us. We signaled Langley for a routine background check.
There's hardly a new face, is it? I mean, he's rather long in the tooth.
Nevertheless, Langley identified Petz as who, Grant?
Alexander Hempel, a Czech intelligence officer who had recently attended a conference of non-aligned journalists in Athens.
Athens? When? How are we supposed to follow this stuff without dates?
15th, 18th of July, Jack. Started on the first day only. Booked his hotel room for 3 days, but never slept in it.
According to Greek records, he arrived on the 14th and never left the country, which means he probably left on a different passport.
All the indications are that he flew to Corfu. Greek flight lists are a mess, but all the indications are for Corfu.
At exactly the time that Pim was on vacation with his family in Corfu.
Oh, really?
Go on, Grant.
At the time of the Salzburg conference, Pim and his wife were attending a music festival there. Hempel, now known as Petz, was staying about 200 yards from the Pim's hotel.
Still a mite tenuous, I should have thought.
We laid out a schedule of all of Pim's known movements in and out of Vienna. Three journeys to Salzburg and two to Linz place him in those towns at exactly the same time as Petz Hempel.
It's a setup. Sticks out of mind.
Come on.
If we were aiming to frame a man, we'd do exactly the same thing. Rake up some old warrior from the firm, run him parallel to the target's movements, and wait for the opposition to shoot themselves in the foot. I don't buy it.
I don't think I do, Harry. Sorry.
Bo, do you mind telling us when Pym will be returning to Vienna?
When we tell him to, I suppose. He still has quite a lot to sort out over here.
Our information is that he has wrapped up his father's affairs over here.
You haven't been following him by any chance?
You've got to pull him in, Bo. Interrogate him. If this is a Czech deception operation, we have to know.
When the moment is right, you have my word.
Maybe the moment's right now.
You really must trust our judgment on that, Harry.
Ah, coffee.
Thank you, Kate.
I do hope this isn't more bills.
Miss Dean. Miss Dean.
What is it, Mr. Canterbury?
Who is that?
The postman, Mr. Canterbury.
Is it our usual man?
I expect so. Usually is.
And why did he knock?
Well, he always does second post. Habit, I suppose. Oh, there's one here for Mr. Dubber.
Really?
It's a brochure. Cruise brochure. Now, who on earth would send me something like that?
Me, I'm afraid. I ordered it on the telephone for you. Gave your name.
I don't understand.
Well, you've always talked about taking the cruise.
Oh, that was years ago. I've lost the urge now.
I looked out that one for you. At least Southampton next week. It'd be my treat.
Oh, no, I couldn't possibly.
Of course you could.
They're not trying to get rid of me, Mr. Canterbury.
I just wanted you to have a holiday. A real holiday. You deserve it.
I couldn't possibly accept it.
You just sleep on it. Look through the brochure and see how you feel in the morning.
Mr. Canterbury?
Yes?
I don't think I'd want to go away now. Not unless you came with me.
I can't, Discover. I can't. I don't have time.
Oh, now. What set that off, I wonder? I don't know what it is he's writing up there, but whatever it is, it's upsetting him. No doubt about that.
In the beginning, it was A for Axel. In all the beginnings, it was A for Axel. It was Axel who created a whole series of fictitious defectors in place. Axel who produced a whole repertory company of Czech actors to make up my agent networks. And Axel who ignited the rocket which lifted me straight into the middle echelons of the firm and to an important posting in Prague.
You like the auto, Sir Magnus?
The blackened windows, especially.
This is the way the aristos travel. We have come up in the world.
Where are we going?
To the giant mountains, Sir Magnus, to a secret castle which is reserved for the pleasures of aristos like ourselves.
What are we meant to be celebrating?
How would you regard a middle executive from our great National Bank of Czechoslovakia who has access to some of our most serious mismanagements?
And where am I supposed to have found him?
In a secret castle in the giant mountains, Sir Magnus. Where else?
Axel's secret castle proved little more than an overblown hunting lodge, but it was secluded, peaceful. The perfect place to recruit a new agent.
This will be a fantastic coup, Sir Magnus. One which will give you great pleasure, I promise you.
We'll need a good cover story. I can't just produce agents out of thin air.
firm can be very fussy about things like that.
I will be very careful, Sir Magnus, for my own sake as well as yours.
Hmm?
It is not only your aristos who are fussy, mine also. They have a great fear that you have been planted on us.
You mean they think I'm a double?
Well, you are, Sir Magnus, but whose? This is what worries them. You must understand, Sir Magnus, your life is my life. We are bound together by our own self-interest. Ah, behold, your new agent.
Dr. Magnus.
Sabina. Oh, Sabina.
You want to take lessons?
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
After dinner, children. After dinner.
And so it was that we created the first and best agent of the new Watchman Network, Olga Kravitskaya, a junior executive of the National Bank of Czechoslovakia. But to me, she was still the same super sexy Sabina.
You love your wife, Magnus?
Not as much as I love you.
That is why you shout at her?
Who told you that?
I listen to tapes. You know about microphones in your house, no?
Of course.
What is the problem, Milagico? Your wife, she is ugly?
On the contrary. It's just that...
What?
They seem to be mutually incompatible. We just seem to have grown apart.
Uh-huh. So you will divorce her?
Eventually.
Good. Now we make some more Czech lessons. You? Hmm?
They were the halcyon days. My beloved Olga Kravitskaya was to provide a never-ending stream of intelligence as she rose to the dizzy heights of secretary to the Prague Internal Committee on Economic Affairs. As for Belinda and me, yes, well, it was to be another 3 years before a posting to Berlin gave us the excuse to put an end to an unhappy marriage.
So, it is over, Sir Magnus?
Yes.
You're sure?
Mm-hmm. Belinda's gone back to London. She's taking some sort of course in journalism.
Mm. And she will not come back?
Not to me. Prosit.
Prosit. Then you must find another wife, Sir Magnus, or we will never get to America.
America?
Of course. America, it's the promised land. Milk and honey for us instead of all the plagues of Egypt. Think America, Sir Magnus. Think America.
But for the moment, it was Berlin. There never was such a garrison of spies as Berlin. British, American, East German, Russian, and Axel, of course. There was always Axel, slipping in and out of the city on a variety of false passports.
I hear you are sharing the same woman as Jack Brotherwood.
It would appear so.
Who is she?
One of our backroom girls here in Berlin.
Good.
Her family's connections with the firm go back to William the Conqueror.
Excellent. Is she married?
You know I never sleep with married women.
Unless they absolutely insist.
Look who's talking.
Has she the makings of one of your wonderful English diplomatic geishas?
Well, she's rich, beautiful, and frightfully British.
And she's maybe just the ticket that will get us to Washington, Sir Magnus.
You are serious, aren't you?
Yeah. It is anyway time you stopped your philandering. You begin to give espionage a bad name.
And so I took Mary to be my lawful wedded partner at the high table of the great Anglo-American alliance. After all I'd given away, it seemed a very reasonable sacrifice. The love, what there was of it, came later. America, much later still. But when I eventually arrived in the Promised Land, I did so with a bang, as deputy head of station in Washington.
Excuse me, please.
Okay, is it someone, fella?
Poppy, yes, Poppy. Do you know her?
Poppy, where are you? Poppy, honey, where are you? Your boyfriend's
really,
here.
Please, it's quite all right.
You're going to lose him if you don't come quick.
Thank you, thank you. Excuse me. Would you mind, please? Thank you. Thank you.
Your friend Poppy cannot come tonight, Sir Magnus.
Huh?
Yes.
Thank God, I thought you hadn't come.
I said I will be here.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry.
Your beautiful wife, where is she?
She had to take Tom home. He was getting too excited.
So, Sir Magnus, we made it. We will feed now at the top table, mixed with the... What did you call them?
My father would have called them the highest in the land.
The highest in the land. In the land of the free and easy.
Axel was right. No country was ever easier to spy on. No nation so free with its secrets. And so ready to make them available.
Thank you, Sir Magnus. Good. Very good.
I thought you'd be interested.
Indeed. You're a perfect spy, Sir Magnus. Perfectly in place.
But Axel wasn't the only one I was perfectly in place for. There was someone else. Someone who always had one more trick to play.
Magnus Pym?
Counselor Pym?
Yes?
I have a call collect from New Jersey. Will you accept?
Yes.
Happy Christmas, Magnus.
Father?
Well, son.
What are you doing in New Jersey?
God's the 12th man on the cricket team, son. It's God who tells us to keep the left elbow up. No one else. He's umpire, judge, and jury rolled into one.
Are you drunk?
There's no conning God. There never was.
I'm not conning God. I'm about to celebrate Christmas with my family.
That grandson of mine all right, is he?
Tom's fine.
Blue eyes, same as mine.
He's got Mary's eyes.
Ah. I hear she's first class. They say she's got a nice little piece of property down in Dorset that must be worth a bob or two.
The pathetic ghost of so many Christmases past had returned to haunt me. Every town I went to, every building I entered, I expected to see Rick shuffling and smirking like a pauper and parading his diminished status like a begging bowl.
And aren't you glad I bought you an education?
Of course I am.
I did it all for you, son. Thanks to me that you've taken your place among the highest in the land.
I know.
Got a few coppers to spare for your old man, have you?
Of course.
How about a nice mixed grill, then? Or are you too ashamed to take your old pal out for a meal?
It was as if all that was left for him was what he owned of me. And he followed me, hanging round my neck like an aging albatross, and infecting me with his own bad luck.
Yeah. More product. Always more product, Sir Magnus.
Damn good product.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
What is it?
I think we will never fly so high again, Sir Magnus.
What do you mean?
I think maybe the time has come for us to retire gracefully.
Why?
We have been careless, Sir Magnus. Certain aristos in London and Langley have begun to see an unfortunate pattern with our check networks.
What pattern?
They have noticed that the networks provide good intelligence when we are running them and almost nothing when we are not.
All networks go moribund now and then. It's quite normal.
These networks go moribund only when we are not there. That is the pattern. It shows up on their computers.
Then signal Prague. Tell your aristos we need better material.
I have not the power, Sir Magnus. You know what they are like in Prague. The man who is absent is the man they conspire against. It is always the same.
Some time later, when I was visiting an industrialist I had befriended, I found myself standing in front of a replica of Nathan Hale, who had been hanged by the British as the spy. His last words were inscribed below. I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country. I met Axel an hour later by a bend in the Charles River.
You seem very tense, Agnes.
I'm always tense after a debriefing.
Not tense like this.
He wouldn't talk to me.
Who wouldn't?
I asked him about the Nimitz refit, and he said his corporation were making great strides in Saudi Arabia.
I see.
I asked him about his discussions with the Pentagon, and he asked me when I was going to bring Mary up to Maine for the weekend.
I don't.
The way he looked at me. He's angry.
With you?
With whoever's warned him about me.
What else?
I was followed to his house. Green fort, smoked windows. There was nowhere for them to hang around, so they left.
What else?
Stop asking what else.
With you, Sir Magnus, there's always something else.
Axel?
Yes?
When we were in Bern together, when we were students, you weren't...
What?
You weren't spying then, were you? There were no, well, aristos running you?
I was not spying. No one ran me. No one owned me.
Is that true?
It was always your idea that I was a spy, Sir Magnus. It was never mine.
It was actually Jack Brotherhoff's idea. Funny all those years. It's the one thing that I've ever really held against him.
It doesn't matter. It's unimportant now.
I'm being posted, Axel.
Where to?
London. Bo Bramall's authorized a hostile interrogation.
So, it is over, Sir Magnus. It's time for us to get up. It is over.
I wondered, then, if that wasn't the time to sell Axel and buy my freedom. But I never did. I never could. Axel was that part of me that was not owned by anybody else. He was my keeper and my virtue. My keeper and my virtue. That could be my epitaph.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Harry, but my understanding was that we'd agreed last August that there was no case against Pym and that all investigation be terminated forthwith.
Yes, Bo, I know.
We certainly kept our part of the bargain.
I know, I know. The agency decided at this particular point to honor the agreement in spirit, Bo, but in the light of what was deemed operationally expedient.
You kept the surveillance going.
On a limited basis only. Very low key.
Thanks very much.
You may find your gratitude well placed, Nigel.
Oh?
10 days ago, we got another signal from Langley. Right, Grant?
Yes, sir. Hempel, alias Petz, also identified as Zaworski, first name Jersey. Born Carlsbad, 1925. West German journalist of Czech origin. Made 9 legal journeys to the U.S. of A. on, well, there. See for yourself, sir.
Thank you.
The dates coincide, presumably, with Pym's tour of duty in the States.
They do.
Perfect.
Give them the rest, Grant.
Okay. Our SIGINT section was asked to reappraise all clandestine radio transmissions beamed from the Czech Embassy in Washington and other known Czech facilities in the United States between certain dates.
These dates here, when Pym was in America?
Yes, sir, exactly those dates.
Thank you.
Our people prepared a schedule of such transmissions so that they could be matched against the movements of eligible suspects.
You mean one eligible suspect, don't you, Harry?
Hmm?
You're going to tell us yet again that every time Pym left Washington, a particular series of coded transmissions from the Czech embassy was discontinued.
Well, yes, sir. With embellishments, I am.
This is becoming rather wearisome.
The embellishment being, Bo, that every American city visited by Pym was also visited on the same dates by Hempel, alias Petz, alias Zaworski.
Right, Grant?
Every time.
Your assumption being that radio transmissions were superfluous because a personal encounter was taking place between the agent in the field and his visiting controller.
Correct.
Bollocks. Whoever dreamt that up deserves an Oscar.
Jack has a point. I mean, if you were framing a man, isn't that precisely what you would do?
Not today, Bo. I wouldn't be that dumb.
What do you mean?
Hell, we all know it's standard practice to continue transmitting even when the party at the other end is known not to be listening. And besides, where is it, Grant, the SIGINT report?
Right here. Bottom of the page.
All right, thanks. According to our SIGINT analyst, and I quote, "The communication techniques we see here, the types of code used in these transmissions, have been out of fashion for years."
Well, what does that signify?
We reckon that the signals are being received by an agent in the field who is of a certain generation of training, an older generation.
I see.
I quote again, and this from our chief SIGINT analyst. "There is a distinct feel, a sense of long habituation, one human being to another," unquote.
Long what?
They've also identified a significant progression in the crypto structure.
Oh, God. What sort of progression?
Textual. It could be a piece of Shakespeare or a Czech nursery rhyme, anything. But apparently there's a definite pattern emerging that could only be based on the continuous text of some such analog.
And that analog would in effect be what? A sort of code book?
That's right.
All our people need is one word, preferably the first. And then it's only a question of time before they identify the text.
Once we have that, it's like a master key. It'll open up every goddamn one of those signals.
Forget it, Wexler. You're barking up the wrong tree. Pym's been a thorn in the side of the Czechs for years. And now they're trying to get rid of him. Or rather, they're trying to get us to do it for them.